Thank you very much. Good morning. Mishas Avimori. So, I guess two words of a brief introduction to the topic. The first is that coming on the heels of Purim, this is actually a little bit of a Purim question as well. We know that the halacha is, when it comes to Mishloach Manos Ish L'Reyeyu, that you have to send two different types of food to one person. And the poskim discuss, so there's a bit of a halachic myth that the two foods have to be two different brachos. There does not seem to be any source in halacha that that should be the case. Although, having two different brachos is generally a good indication that you're dealing with two different types of food. So it's a convenient way of knowing that you're dealing with two minim. But the halacha really is that you require two minim. And the poskim discuss, well, what exactly makes something into two minim? If you have a red apple and a green apple, it's technically two different types, but everybody calls them apples. So most of the poskim would assume that that's not considered to be two minim, that's only considered to be one min. It's the min of apples. So the question is, when you have one food which has multiple ingredients in it, would that make it two minim or one min? So, for example, a salad, or more apropos to what we're discussing right now, let's take something like sushi, where you have multiple ingredients, and you have rice, and you have fish, and you have vegetables, and it's in the seaweed, and it's all wrapped together, but it's known as one entity. It's perhaps even come together as one entity. Would that be considered to be two minim or only one? So hopefully by the end we'll be able to have a better understanding of what that should look like. The background for the topic is a Maisa Shehaya. Story took place in, November 2008. And I had just begun Nepenei Sharon and Tinek. And we were living in a rental home. And I went to shul in the morning. And we had been smart in all of our other previous apartments and in our current home right now to put a Shabbos lock in. But we were only in this rental home for a little bit. I went to shul, and my wife was getting everybody ready for shul, and they took the kids were out of the house, and somebody pulled the door shut and didn't realize that, you know, you needed the key and the door locked by itself. And by the time she arrived at shul with the children, my son came over to me and says, "Oh, by the way, we're locked out of the house." I said, "Okay, that should be an interesting rest of the day." Now, there happened to have been a bar mitzvah in shul. So I'd been in the shul for approximately a month and a half at the time, and didn't know so many of the people yet. And I went over to the Baal Simcha at the end to wish him Mazel Tov. And he said, "Oh, you know, we didn't know your address. Could you please join us for the Kiddush downstairs?" I said, "Oh, this is perfect. Our food is locked in the house anyway. So now we'll have the opportunity to join them at the Kiddush." And it was quite an elaborate Kiddush, and it worked out very, very well. And by the time we got home, went to a friend's house, and Shabbos was over, we were able to get the locksmith to open up the house. At the Kiddush, they had a non-Jewish fellow making sushi. And I was just looking at it, and something about it looked off. Now, there are people that look at the world, and everything is usher until proven otherwise. And I'm not one of those people. But something about it just looked like there must be questions. And I spent some time afterwards trying to think about it a little bit more. I discussed it with some chaverim, and I ended up writing an article about it in the RJJ Journal. It was printed in 2010. I don't like to usually quote from things that I have written, but there's an important footnote at the beginning, which I think is very relevant. Just to put in perspective of, you know, where we've come, the editor's note at the beginning of it's not in the Mar Makomos, but the editor's note at the beginning of the RJJ Journal article writes, "Sushi is such a relatively new item in the Jewish kitchen that there has not been a great deal of halachic discussion about it among leading poskim. Therefore, in a departure from our usual procedure, the Journal of Halachic Contemporary Society is publishing this article as an introduction to the topic. We invite comments and input from our readers." And it's true, it was then a new food in the Jewish world. And now, my children go to a pizza store and they expect to find sushi. I'm not sure if any other culture has managed to make the shidduch between pizza and sushi like Jews have, but somehow it's become everywhere. And the question really is, at least in terms of Shabbos, what malachos of Shabbos could potentially be involved in making sushi? So if you look at the The first of the sources, if you look at the Mishnah Maseches Shabbos and Daf Ayin Gimel, so the Mishnah lists off all the malachos, the Arboim Chaser Achas, the 39 malachos of Shabbos. So of those malachos, which ones are relevant? So right at the beginning, on the first line, one of them you have is Tochein. Tochein is grinding. As we'll see shortly, grinding can potentially be... The question is, at what point is something considered to be ground? If you take a piece, you take the kernel of the wheat as the sidur de pas, right? The first malachos are all about creating bread and going from the stage of planting it and growing it all the way down to grinding it into flour. So when you grind the kernel into flour, so it's certainly ground. But at what point is it considered to be ground up? If you take something and dice it very small, is that considered to be ground? So we'll discuss that shortly. You have vegetables in sushi, again, maybe with... Sorry, just one point of hakdama in case anybody's not familiar with sushi, just to make sure that it's very, very clear. Basically, the basic process of making the sushi is you have rice. Sushi rice is a special type of rice which sticks together, which will be important for our halachic discussion as well. The rice is generally laid out on a piece of nori, which is this dried seaweed, which has recently come up with some halachic questions in terms of kashrus. There have been certain ones that have found to have little crustaceans that have been smushed into the seaweed when it was dried. Well, how prevalent that is and whether you have to be concerned on the ones that have ashkach or not is a completely different topic. And then once it's put there, then it's filled with whatever you're going to put inside it, which can be fish, vegetables, cucumbers, avocado, whatever it is. It's rolled up, and then they take a bamboo mat and squeeze it together to make sure that it holds. Generally sliced up, flipped over, and then you have a nice, very appealing looking piece of sushi. So again, so one of the malachas that we may have to deal with is tochein. Another malacha that we're going to try to look at is makeh b'patish. Makeh b'patish is the final hammer blow, which generally is when you create something on Shabbos. So what exactly is the gather? What exactly are the parameters of makeh b'patish? When do you have to be concerned? When do you not have to be concerned? That will be a malacha that we need to look at. There's a discussion in the poskim of tofer. Tofer is sewing. Sewing, how exactly that fits in, we'll see. Maybe it doesn't really, but we'll discuss it since it is discussed. Lush? If you swoosh the lush is kneading. So there's a machlokas in the poskim when it comes to when you have completely pulverized something. When you take a banana and you smash a banana, you take an avocado and you smash an avocado, is that considered to be tochen? Is that considered to be lush? Where exactly does that fit in? That's a potentially a good question. Generally, it's sliced up and it's not made into like a guacamole kind of substance. So that probably won't be problematic. And then the biggest question that we'll see is going through the malacha of bona, of building, of constructing. So let's try to look at these malachos. If anybody has any other malachos that your concern may be involved, you know, feel free to chime in. Again, obviously, depending how far you want to go, so bishul, you could potentially raise as a question as well. The rice is cooked. Now, the rice is cooked, can be cooked, and should be cooked, and we're assuming is cooked before Shabbos. I'll give you one other ma'aseh shehaya, just in terms of understanding. Again, people are concerned. My response when this has come up from caterers is, so just make it before Shabbos. What's the big deal? And they're appalled at the thought. How can you make it before Shabbos? So what's the problem with making it before Shabbos? So I would think it has something to do with the freshness of the fish. But that's obviously not true, because it's the same fish. They didn't catch the fish on Shabbos. It's the same fish from before Shabbos and on Shabbos. The real problem is the rice. Is that the rice tends to dry out once it is done. So what do they do? If you go to, let's say, Shabbos morning. So why is the rice any better? So I have a balabas in my shul, a very, very, very special person. And he found out that there was a family in a nearby community that couldn't afford, for various reasons, couldn't afford to make a bar mitzvah celebration for her son, who was a single mother. And we were trying to figure out in a cost-effective way how we could arrange to have a appropriate bar mitzvah so that he shouldn't feel left out, different from the rest of his friends. And we made all the arrangements that we did it. We did it in my shul, so we were able to do it at a discount and a lot of different things. We did it as a drop-off. So one of the things he felt very strongly about was they need to have sushi. I'm not sure if that's makev or not. He felt very strongly need to have sushi. But I told him, I said, for two reasons, I said, you cannot have a sushi chef there. First of all, I said, it doesn't look right. I said, people, for the most part, know that there is a financial need here. And for her to have a sushi chef, it's possible. It's not going to look right. It's going to be uncomfortable. And then I said, the second problem is that as much as possible, we were trying to do it as what we call in the kashrus world, a drop-off, which means everything comes in sealed with, you know, the kashrus tape, so you don't have to have a mashkiach there. The kitchen remains closed, and everything is there with the, you know, with the tape on it. And you, if you have a person making sushi, then you have to have a mashkiach. So we were trying to figure out a way around it. So he came up with an idea. So he has a friend who's in the sushi industry. So he said, okay, we came up with the idea that the person will make the sushi in my house on Motzei Shabbos. That the person makes the sushi in my house, so I'm present, I'll be the mashkiach, and the sushi will be fresh because we wouldn't want Chas V'Shalom have old sushi. And then I'm only, you know, a block and a half away from shul, we'll shuttle them over to the shul as the sushi is ready. So they dropped off all of the ingredients sealed in my house before Shabbos. What was amazing was the rice. The rice was cooked right before Shabbos. He dropped it off maybe 2 hours before Shabbos. It basically was taken out of the rice cooker and put into saran wrap and wrapped up immediately. And was then, you know, taped and put in my refrigerator until after Shabbos. When he opened it up after Shabbos, it was kimat warm still. This is 30 hours later. The dents in the fridge. In the fridge. Yeah, I don't know if I'd call it warm, but it's certainly room temperature. It was not cold like you would expect something from the you would expect something from the fridge. Somehow it maintains its warmth and its moisture. And when he was making it, and my kids were sampling as the sushi chef was making the sushi, doesn't everybody have a sushi chef in their house on Motzei Shabbos from Av Malka? So they it tasted just as fresh as if it was done before Shabbos. So again, so that's the solution, where if you have the person who's able to make the sushi fresh on Shabbos morning, the rice will be fine. The rice this way will be wrapped up. You just open up the saran wrap and everything is okay. So the bishul should be the easiest one to avoid. So let's look first at the issue of tochein. So again, the first source here just has the different malachos. So again, all the malachos that we mentioned are listed here. But if you look at the second source, the Shulchan Aruch says in Archayim in Shin Chaf Aleph Sif Yud Beis, HaMechatek HaYerek Dak Dak Chayiv Mishum Tochein. If you chop up a vegetable, dak dak, very fine, then you are chayiv, you're liable on Shabbos for grinding. Now, obviously, the big discussion is, what on earth does dak dak mean? How fine is too fine? We'll look at that more in a second. Then we have another rule, which is important to know, right above the second line part, dein tochein achar tochein. It's just a good klal to know. If you take challah or matzah or something like that and grind it up on Shabbos, that is not a problem because there's no tochein after tochein. Since that was originally ground up into the flour that was used to make it into matzah, so you can't have grinding a second time. We'll have later in bishul achar bishul, in tochein achar tochein. So there are certain malachas that you can't repeat the malacha. Then he writes in the next underlined part, v'chol zel lo mayri ela b'chotech u'meniach. Avalim la'ochlo miyad, that this the problem of cutting it up too finely is only if you do it in advance. If you're chotech, if you chop it up, u'meniach, and then you're going to leave it. Avalim la'ochlo miyad, if it's for immediate use, hakol shari, it's all mutter, it's all permitted. Midi dehave aboror la'ochlo miyad deshari. Similar to one of the tanoim, one of the conditions in order to permit borer, that borer, which is done for immediate use, again, with the other conditions, is considered to be permitted. So again, we have to first define what dak dak is. But even within the if you're going to do it, there is a way to do it dak dak. As long as you do it miyad, as long as you do it for immediate use. So the poskim have a big debate what dak dak means. Some say that means that you don't have to chew it anymore, which is pretty small. Just pretty small. Others say that dak dak is smaller than you would normally chop them up. for whatever it is that you're chopping them. So again, when you deal with Israeli salad or something like that, it becomes a big shayla in terms of how small are you allowed to cut these things. So l'chatchila, it's certainly better to cut those things samach l'su'uda, near the meal, so you don't have to be concerned. And that's what the Mishneh Berurah says over here. The Mishneh Berurah says in Shin Chaf Aleph Mem Hei, v'yesh mefak v'kivin al heter zeh, v'gam beitel zeh kosef shav shem yishim mechav v'nechol miyad. Even if there are some that don't even like the doing it for immediate use. And there are those that say that even if you're doing immediate, gam kein yizar laktoch l'chatichos gedolos k'tas, that even if you're doing it for immediate use, not all the posts can think that the kula, that the leniency that we have from Borer can carry over to Tochein, and therefore they're concerned that even then you should cut it slightly larger than you normally would. It's proper to do as the Beis Yosef says. So again, Mishneh Berurah is a little concerned with chopping things into small pieces even if it's going to be done for immediate use, but says don't protest if somebody's doing it as long as it is for immediate use, because there are poskim on whom to rely. Yes. So that's the next thing he's going to discuss. Very good. That's his shear, is when you're leaving shul. So if somebody wanted to cut it up before going to shul, which is usually the convenient time to get things ready so that when people come home, you know, ravenous after shul, they'll be able to eat right away, that would be problematic. That would not be considered to be samach. Deboinen samach l'su'uda mamish. It has to be immediately before the meal. Some of the poskim want to learn that the samach here has to do with the samach, the mincha ketan, and the mishnah at the beginning of Arvei Pesachim, that it means a half an hour. Okay, again, it gives you at least a shear. The point is that it's going to be what, this is the way most of the poskim seem to assume, is that it should be when you are doing the immediate meal preparations as opposed to the ones where you stop afterwards. So for 40 minutes, if that's what it's going to take to make the immediate preparations, but you're not going to then go, you know, to the next door neighbor to have a lechayim, whatever it is, then you're still considered to be samach l'su'uda.
Or it doesn't have to be instantly?
Yes. Yes, but the assumption here is that this is not something that which you do at the table. Although samach l'su'uda, when it comes to borer, is discussed also by tzia beis haknesses. There are times when it may be permitted even samach l'su'uda if it's for the su'uda preparations. Then he writes, v'achotem ha'betzol ha'betzol dak shau ushtayim kodem ha'su'uda, somebody who cuts up onions or radish into small pieces an hour or two before the meal, karov ha'davar lomar shechayiv chatos. Wow. Says it's potentially could be this person has violated an iser de oraisa, v'abitzolim asurim b'achila, and that would asur the food, that would forbid the food. Okay, so the first potential issue would be chopping up the vegetables. The way around that is going to be one of two things. Well, if you do it before Shabbos, which again, cucumbers, you wrap them up or whatever it is, presumably should still be okay. If not, as long as you're doing it samach, so if you have the person who's doing the sushi cutting up the vegetables and putting them in immediately, then l'chora, and again, and they may not be dak, the post can have a discussion about lengthwise versus, again, you can get into the details, but this seems to be something which can be overcome. What about, you know, sometimes you'll have the fish itself is ground up. If you have the spicy salmon, spicy tuna, where it becomes like they make it into a mixture and everything is ground together. What about grinding that up? So that is the Shulchan Aruch says in the fourth source in Shin Chaf Aleph in Siftes, Mutter lachtoch basar mevushal otzli dak besakin. You are able to cut up meat which has been cooked, you are able to cut that up into small pieces. Why? So Mishneh Berurah explains, De'ein t'china ela begidulei karka. Because generally we assume, because there are poskim who do disagree, but generally we assume that in order, again, similar to the way the malacha is originally described, that it has to do with the sidur, the pas, the creation of the bread. So that is talking about grinding up something which grew from the ground. But when you have meat or fish or something which didn't grow from the ground, that can be cut up, that would not be subject to the malacha of tochein, and that should be okay as well. There is a discussion about muktzah. Generally we assume that raw meat and raw fish is muktzah. You can't do anything with it on Shabbos. It's an important thing to keep in mind when one packs the freezer, that the you shouldn't have to, if you want to be able to get, you know, a cake or something out of the freezer, there shouldn't be raw meat in front of it that needs to get moved. Otherwise, you get involved in some very serious hilchos mukta questions about how to get around it. So here, the poskim assume that's because it can't be eaten. But if you have fish, or again, I think there are meats like this also nowadays, that if you have these foods which are meant to be eaten raw and they're of a high enough quality that it can be eaten raw, then it wouldn't be muktzah. That's food for Shabbos. It happens to be that it goes around the rule, but really the fact that it's muktzah doesn't have to do with the fact that it's raw. It has to be that it's not usable in its current state. So that should not be a concern as well. Okay, so tovein seems to be something that we can get out of fairly easily. The next source, which we'll just take care of two of the malachas before we get to, I think, what the major malacha that we need to figure out is this tshuva from Rav Asher Weiss Shlita. So he writes as follows. He says, in source number 6, there seem to be three malachos that we have to deal with in making sushi on Shabbos. Bonem, tofer, umakev patish. So bonem, building, construction, tofer, sewing, and makev patish, completing something. So what we're going to look at him right now on tofer and makev patish, and then we'll get back to bonem afterwards. So he says, b'shabbos kufim heim ubeiz amru b'mishnah, he says, kol shabbo b'chamen me'er of Shabbos, show no so b'chamen b'shabbos. Anything which is put into chamen, hot water, on Erev Shabbos, on Friday, you can put it back into hot water on Shabbos. This is a rule that we generally know, which as ein bishul achar bishul. Now once something has been cooked, again, if we're talking about a solid, don't want to extrapolate too much, but again, this line is really the core of that entire difficult sif in Shin Yud Ches in Shulchan Aruch, how to read it about ein bishul achar bishul and the difference between liquid and not liquid, but it all comes from this. Interestingly, I believe the words Ein Bishul Achar Bishul do not appear anywhere in Shas. It's the Rishonim who summarized this line of Kol Shabbo B'chamin Me'erev Shabbos Shorin Oso B'chamin B'Shabbos, that anything which is soaked in hot water before Shabbos can then be put into hot water again on Shabbos. That means Ein Bishul Achar Bishul, and they've extrapolated that from this rule. V'chol Shalobo B'chamin Me'erev Shabbos Madichin Oso B'chamin B'Shabbos, and anything which is not put in hot water before Shabbos, you can rinse it off with warm water on Shabbos. That is also a very difficult line to understand. And the poskim generally assume, in the way the Mishnah Berurah explains over there, is that means from a kli sheni. That means from a kli sheni, from a kli rishon, would be a problem because that would be potential of being mevashalit. All of that is not what we really need. The last line, though, is the one that is more important for us. Chutz min ha-meliach ha-yoshen v'kuyus ha-yispan, except for some sort of old is probably the wrong word, I guess we would call it aged, salty fish, shehadachason zuhi gemar malachtan, that by doing the hadacha, that by rinsing it, that was the completion of the malacha. And it's not clear what that last line means. So Rav Asher writes, Rov ha-rishonim pirshu, most of the rishonim understood, da kavana mishum meleches mevashel, that the problem with these fish is that just by rinsing it, and again, presumably, according to them, it would be in hot water. They are maybe what we would call kalei habishul. There's something about them which would say that it has been cooked already. It would be cooked by this, even though it's only a little bit, and that would be a problem. Achyesh ben aposkim on the next page, Shapir Shadivir Chazal Kepashus Hashonim. Now, the Rishon don't understand it according to the simple reading. The Achena Isser, what's the Isser? Mishum Gemar Malachton. That you're completing it. The Hainu Makke B'Patish. That is makev patish. Basically say that they're very, very salty. They're not edible until you rinse it off. And then the rinsing off would not have to be with hot water anymore. The rinsing off could be even with cold water, because it's not a question of bishul anymore. It's a question of making it edible. You've taken something which wasn't edible, and by washing it off, you've made it edible. That is makev patish. So he goes, so he says, b'pim begad mishneh bura nakal ikar d'mavaychal emelachas makev patish. And this is the important point for us, is that the Mishnah Berurah there assumes in the Bir Halacha, and this is the consensus of most of the poskim, that it can't be that the issue is makev patish, because the malacha of makev patish does not apply to food. There are certain malachos, he quotes here, in Tzviya ba'ochlin, in Ibud ba'ochlin, there are certain malachos that don't apply to food. Makev patish is one of them. If that is true, without getting into the reasons why it should be true, then that would take makev patish out of the running for being a concern when it comes to making sushi on Shabbos, because it's food, and there's no makir patish for food, on food. He says further that even those that are makir, patish probably wouldn't say it by sushi, because by sushi, each of the ingredients separately is edible. So you've made it into something new, but you didn't not, it's not like the case of the fish, where the fish could not be consumed as is. Let's just quickly, oh boy. Let's quickly go through, he says that there's no, but vegamishin beis, vegamishim tofer in lenir lahachmir, you shouldn't be, this probably you should not be machmir about sewing, devemes near ikar, degamechas tofer leka bochen, or kamoshim sinu be. But okay, so without getting into his proof at the moment, he wants to suggest that tofer, sewing, does not apply to food either. So the only malacha that we are left with, which is the one that I want to look at in more detail, is the malacha of bona. So let's look at the malacha of bona. So we know that one of the 39 malachos is bona, and we typically think of bona as construction. If you build something, if you build your house, you build something significant on Shabbos, that is the concern when it comes to bona. However, it's clear from the Gemara that the bona is not limited to that case. So if you look at number 7, the Gemara in Shabbos, and the Gemara says, Megabein Mishum Machayim. Megabein, what is Megabein? Megabein is making cheese on Shabbos. So again, the general process of making cheese, in a very superficial way, you take the milk, and you add either something from the stomach of the cow, or something which mimics it, and then the enzyme causes it to separate, you wrap it up, and then it becomes one block, one entity of the cheese. So what is Megabein going to be chayiv for in Shabbos? So Amar Lo's answered, Mishum Megabein, you're chayiv for Megabein. Okay, thank you very much, that's not very helpful. Megabein is not on our list of 39 melachos. So Amar Lo's, Rabba, Kata, Kani, Va'agmava. Is your Rebbe out in the field? He's lost touch. He didn't answer the question that we asked. So Asa Shoyal Bei Midrasha, they asked in the base Medrash, Amrahu, and they said, Cholev, if you milk a cow, Chayim Mishum Mefarik. That is Mefarik, which is a tolda of dash. You've separated the liquid from the solid. Mechabetz Chayim Mishum Borer. Mechabetz would be adding in the enzyme to allow the separation of the different parts of the milk, but not wrapping it up into the point of it becoming cheese. That would be a Borer problem. And Megabin Chayim Mishum Bona. And Megabein is chayiv for bona. So we see already that if we wanted to say that some of the other malachos had an exception when it comes to food, that is not the case when it comes to bona. Bona is applicable when it comes to food. And the question is, well, how exactly does that work? Why should bona apply to food? What's the problem? Is that we have a rule of ein binyan bekelim. Now, when it comes to utensils, when it comes to movable objects, we assume there is no problem of bona. So why would this be worse than a kli, than putting something, attaching something to a kli on Shabbos? So that question was bothering the Rashba. So if you look at number 8, the Rashba writes, "Haiman da ayo shufta bekofina rabba merchai mishum bona." So that case, the Gemara on Shabbos and Daf Kuf Beis is talking about putting a peg into some sort of shovel in order to make sure that the parts don't fall apart. So it says, one second, that you're chayiv for chayiv because of bona. So Ikal Medak can ask, v'ayim binyan mekelim? But it's a kli. There's no binyan when it comes to kelim. So why would there be bona? Why would it be chayiv for bona when you put this peg into the shovel? When we say there's no construction when it comes to kelim, that's when it comes to something which is supposed to come apart and you put it back together. So if you have a menorah made out of different sections and it comes apart and you put it back together, so when you take it apart or put it back together, again, maybe the mushel, for those who have the zuchus of having children or grandchildren coming, you have a pack and play. Right, so the crib which comes apart. So it's meant to you squeeze the things, it comes apart, it comes back together. So that lechora is not a problem. That's not a bona. That's not bona on Shabbos. That's the way. That's derech tashmisho. That's the normal way of using it. Ukedishar Beis Hillel is gavzam and arbi yomtov. Like Beis Hillel says that you're allowed to put this menorah together on yomtov. Avalasos kli lechatchila. But to make a kli anew that was never a kli before. Ein lecha binyan gadol mizeh. Okay, there is no greater binyan than that. Okay, that's a language that often appears in Rishonim. It doesn't necessarily mean, you know, obviously building a house is binyan gadol mizeh. But obviously, what he's trying to say is that making a new kli that never existed before is certainly going to be bona on Shabbos. So if you take this shovel and put it together with this yosef, with a peg, and now it's a real kli that never wasn't a kli before, and certainly you're going to be chayiv on Shabbos. That's not subject to this kula of ein binyan b'kelim. Ve'ein ze nikra binyan b'kelim. That's not binyan b'kelim. Sharei eino kli. It wasn't a binyan on a kli. Ela osa kli. You're making a new kli, and that's going to be a problem. U'baze nicha. This is an important line for us. And with this, we understand Hadar Minah Alper Kamat Sniya. What we say in the Gemara and Shabbos, the Megabin Chayiv Yishun Bona. That Megabin, you're Chayiv because of Bona. V'ayim Binyan Bekelim. If there's no Binyan when it comes to making a new vessel, utensil, Heich Etzer Sheish Binyan Ba'ochlin. How can it be that food is going to be any different than a Kli, and it's going to be worse? Ella, now we understand. Sha'osar davar mitchilasa chay mishum sha'osa kli v'hu habona. He says that no, now what you see is that if you make something new, if you make something new, you're going to be chayiv because of bona.
Another thing was, now you're making something new, here you have a chemical reaction taking place when you add the enzyme, so that you now have a new product that you can't change back to the milk.
Oh, that's a very, very, that's an important point. Hold on 1 second with that point. That's a very, very good point.
That was the previous thing. In other words, he said that they broke it up into three issues. What you're saying, eating the enzyme was what he called tofer, right?
It was mechabit, it was borer. It was borer. No, that's true, but the point about that it's a reaction that can't go backwards is an important one. When it comes to the ein binyan b'kelim, so you construct something and you can take it apart, and usually you can take it back to its components. Megabein is interesting in that you can't undo it. There's no way to, you know, take, I don't think, or certain Chazal didn't know anyway, maybe now there is, of taking the cheese and making it, turning it back into milk and getting all the components. That point may be very, very, very significant. So we need to understand what is the malacha of Bona. So the Rambam writes, the malacha of Bona, in number 9, v'im givno v'aso v'nechai mishim bona. You're chamichai because of bona. Why? What's the definition of bona? Shekola mekabet chilek el chivik v'dova kako at shiasa guf echad areze doma lebinyan. The Rambam seems to say, and he's talking about cheese, a very straightforward definition of bona. If you take different parts and you put them together until they become one guf echad, Harezet Dome Binyan, that is like Binyan, and it's going to be Chayiv. It's not going to be Chayiv as an Av, but it's going to be Chayiv as a Toldah. Generally, Avos and Toldos are both the Oraisa. There are those that do want to understand that the Rambam here means that it's only the Rabbanon. We'll leave that for the moment. But again, this definition of the Rambam seems to be that Bona is going to, you're going to be Chayiv for Bona anytime you take different pieces, put them together, and now you have a guf echa. Now you have one new or one item that is bona. If you look at the Mogen Avram in source number 10, the Mogen Avram writes, "Vim givno v'asog v'nechay mishim bona shekol makabet tchel gachel v'kdibe kol ashiyase guf echa doma lebinyan." He basically quotes verbatim the Rambam, which is important because again, it's one thing to know that it's the Rambam Shita, but the Magen Avraham is already telling us how to paskin.
Was that not a problem with practice?
Because that will get back to the binyan ustira b'kelim, that if that's the normal way of doing it, excuse me, of building it and undoing it, then it's derech tashmisho. But again, it's important to know what the Magen Avraham is saying, because the Magen Avraham is already telling us how to paskin. Right? Just because the Rambam tells us this is the definition, just the definition doesn't necessarily tell us that that's how we're going to assume the halacha. The Mogen Avraham is already trying to put us on track in terms of how we are going to assume the halacha. So how far does this go? In other poskim, we know megabein, we know that cheese making is going to be chai because of bona, but how far do we see it in other contexts as well? So the Shulchan Aruch writes in number 11, Simen Shin Mem, HaMekabetz Devela V'asa Mimenu Igu. There was this thing that comes up in Mishnah, it's like Gulei Devela. It's not 100% clear what it was, but somehow they took these figs and they put them together and they dried it in such a way that it turned almost like into a hard wheel. So much so, there's a Mishnah in Maseches Tirus that seems to say you need to use a saw in order to cut it. So it really became one thing. So if you put them together and you make this igul, or shenak up te'enim, or you make holes in te'enim b'hichnis achevel, and you put in a string, until you make it into one, Hareza told us ma'amer v'chayev. That is the malach of ma'amer. What's the malach of ma'amer? The malach of ma'amer is gathering. Gathering. It only applies to things that grow in the field, maybe it only applies in the field, that's actually a discussion over here, but that's the malach of gathering. So you put it together in this way, it's gathering. Says the Mogen Avraham, number 12, I don't understand. V'tzarech iyon, delam lo yischayev, zem yishim bona. What happened to Bona? You took these different Develim and you put them together. It became one. Isn't that the definition that the Rambam says? If you take different items, you put them together, make it into one. Until it becomes one. That's exactly what Shulchan Aruch said. You did it. It's the language verbatim of the Rambam. So what happened? Why does the Shulchan Aruch say you're chayiv because of your gathering and doesn't say you're chayiv because of Bona? Answer, what?
That's the purpose, the way they sold it. It wasn't the purpose to create a new object. It was the purpose that...
But they did. So, Zakhbab Lachash and Tzuchel Gufa, maybe. Says the Mogen Avraham, he gives a very interesting answer. Says the Mogen Avraham, V'tzarech lomar delom, and it's maybe fits in line with what you're saying, V'tzarech lomar delom ikre bon elke shemechavein liafoso ula hashvoso. It's only considered to be bonam if you care about how the end result looks. You want it to look nice. You want it to be precise. And again, maybe that's the way they were selling it. They didn't care how it looked. They stripped them together. They made it into one. That's the way to get it out into the market. Great. But if it's going to be that you care about the hashvoso, how it's going to look, then you're going to be chayev. So if we take the definition of the Magen Avraham, so we have, again, a little bit of a caveat in terms of the Rambam, that the Rambam told us that it was if you take different components and combine them together, if you care about how the end result comes together, then you're chayiv because of bona. If you're not, okay, so then you could discuss ma'amer, you could discuss other malachos, but you're not going to be concerned because of bona. How did the poskim take this? If you look at the Chayei Adam in number 13, says the Chayei Adam, in the underlying part, afilu b'davar ma'icho shayich binyan, that even when it comes to a food, binyan bona can apply. It can go to megaben gvina nechayotze bo, just like we saw by the cheese. V'lav davka gvina, not only gvina, el afilu medabik peros. If you stick together fruit, u'mechavin asosom ba'al tmuna, and you want to make an image out of it, aruch u'merubel, long, square, chayiv mishum bona. You know, you go to one of these fancy kiddushim and they make like a knight in shining armor out of a watermelon and a cantaloupe. You stick these things all together and you make something where you care about the image, says the Chayei Adam, your chayiv, because of bona. If you look at the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, number 15, Isser bona shayach gam b'mayachal kegoyim agavim gvina u'mishadabek peros u'mashro samshu yofen, that bona applies to foods, when it comes to cheese, or if you put together the fruits, v'lachay, and therefore, listen to this example. Again, but from the examples at the poskim that we were relying, the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, these are the mainstream poskim for the most part. What examples are they giving where we're concerned about because of bona? Kishechotchem b'tzolim in beitzim, you chop up eggs with onion, or chaylev, I guess with some sort of maybe like a schmaltz kind of thing, or dag maluach. Leave it out, falls on the plate. Don't start smoothing it out. Don't start making it very precise. Wow. That's bona. That the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch tells us is bona already. Now, in truth, I just want to make sure, just put this out there. The Stipler asks the Magen Avraham's question about Ma'amer, and he gives a very different answer. It's not in the Mar Makomos. I didn't have it in time. The Stipler writes that the reason that Megabain, the reason that it's not Ma'amer, is the Rambam would say that if you put things together, it's only going to be chayv because of bona, by cheese making, is because you can't take it apart. You can't undo it, like what you were saying beforehand. So if that's true, then our whole discussion becomes a lot easier. However, where did that go? I just want to give you the quote of the stapler. I thought I brought it with me. If not, I'll tell it to you orally. He makes it very, very clear that he was writing it without any svarim. He says, I don't have any svarim with me, and therefore before relying on this lahalacha, you should discuss it with other poskim. And then he writes at the end, oh, somebody pointed out to me that the Mogen Avraham asks this question and gives a different answer. That combined with the fact that the poskim haven't assumed that way in the past doesn't seem like a great way out of the shaila. Again, it's a very different understanding that because it became one and it can't be taken back into its components, that would be perhaps a reason to make up. It does not seem to be that's the consensus in the poskim. How far does this go as we're running out of time? So not to do it inside, but Rav Asher Weiss, in this number 16 over here, if you want to look in his Sefer on Hilchos Shabbos, which again, he's not necessarily writing as a halachic work, he thinks that if you take cake and put frosting in between it and make a 7-layer cake on Shabbos, you're chayiv mishimbona. Why? You're mekabeit chelek el chelek. And even if you want to say, oh, well, maybe we assume like the Rashba that it has to be something new. A 7-layer cake is a different type of cake than the other cake. Given all of that, l'chora, both according to the Rambam and according to the Rashba, if you take all the ingredients of sushi and you're putting it together, l'chora, you have a big problem because of bona. It becomes a guf echad. Right, they squeeze it together at the end. They'll point that it shouldn't fall apart. You've taken, and if you, the Magen Avraham says, as long as you're concerned about the hashvosam, uliyafosam, how it looks, the whole industry is about how it looks. You know, they put the pictures up of the nicest looking rolls and whatever else. It's all about how it looks. You put all that together, and the Ora have a very big concern for bonem when it comes to sushi. It's considered to be a new thing. Your mekabetz chilek al chilek. Now whether this would be a daraisa or it would be a derabban might depend on that Rambam. But with Ora we have a very significant problem. Now what's the difference? This is usually the question which comes up at this point. So where do you draw the line between, you know, a sandwich, a peanut butter sandwich also? You take the two pieces of bread and you take the peanut butter and you stuck it, like, ah, you're boned, you can't make a peanut butter sandwich on Shabbos. Make a wrap, make a salad. L'chora, there are two major differences between the two. The first one is the liafosam, is that usually when you're making a sandwich, the concern isn't with the appearance. Here, the whole industry is about making sure that it's going to look good in the end. The second one is how together are there. Normally, again, depends how much peanut butter I guess you put on, but certainly if you make a tuna sandwich, if you pick up the sandwich from the top piece of bread, the bottom will fall down. If you pick up a wrap from the, you know, where it opens, if it doesn't have the foil or whatever, the paper on the bottom, the whole thing falls apart. Try this at home. Pick up the sushi from where it's been closed with all the weight holding down. If the guy did a good job, it will not fall apart. It won't fall apart. It's meant to stay together. That's why they squeeze it at the end with the bamboo thing, the bamboo mat, is to make sure that it's going to stick together. So given all of that, l'chora, you have a very, very serious shaila of bona when it comes to sushi. Now, there is a potential kula, I think, which would be, it could be there's a lot more room to make on making sushi at home if you don't really know what you're doing versus doing it professionally. Because again, if the whole issue is how it's going to look and that it's becoming guf echad, so if you're not so good at it, or if you don't squeeze it with a bamboo thing and it doesn't stick together, so it could be there's a lot more room to be makil at home, and then it's like a salad. It doesn't come together in the same way than you would be when it comes to a caterer. So I discussed this with numerous poskim at the time. I discussed it with Rav Asher Weiss because I was very convinced that if you think 7-layer cake is usser, you have to believe sushi is usser. I wouldn't have thought 7-layer cake is a problem. I wouldn't have thought that it's something new. I wouldn't have thought that it stays together the same way. So I discussed it with him on the phone. Again, this was 10 years ago. And he said, yeah, he said, you can quote me in the RJJ article as saying that it's usher the Uraisa. So I attempted to do that and the editor took it out. He said he didn't want to quote a private conversation. Which maybe he was right, because subsequently, I'm not sure that he holds that anymore. I hope to see him tonight. He came in, he's giving a share right now. Medical ethics for anybody who wants to go 45 minutes ago to Brooklyn. But he's giving a share actually in Bergenfield this evening at 7:45 in Beth Abraham, if anybody would like to hear. I want to ask you about this. No.
He speaks English
beautifully. He'll be on Inyanei Pesach tonight. And he, in that tshuva that I quoted earlier, he does say to be machmir, and then he has this paragraph that he added recently that somebody sent me at the end, where he has a chiddush that there's no such thing as boner ba'ochel. I'm not sure how that fits in with the Gemara's. So I assume he has an explanation. I don't know what it is. I spoke with the Shachter and Rabbi Willig at the time. They all assumed that it was at least in Isser Dirabbanan. L'maisa, when it comes to these caterers, so they're all having a guy do it. So the question is at what point, you know, if a guy is doing it and it's a malacha derabbanan, not a malacha deraisa, so it's a shvus to shvus, it's a double derabbanan. So we are sometimes mekel on a double derabbanan bimako. Has to be some sort of need. This is a need. I mean, sushi is a need. I don't know. Oneg Shabbos. You have to figure out exactly what the need is. The OU policy from the emails that I have had back and forth, I will quote from the email that I received from the OU. The Chayyodem writes that there's bona with foods if one sticks together foods to make shapes. Rebelski Zatzal was not sure if sushi was included in this. Therefore, he would not say that it is usher to have a non-Jew make sushi, but he was against the idea of a sushi station. He held it was wrong, and he told us to advise caterers that it was not lechatchila, but he would not stop them if they insisted. You have to have a caterer who's a big Yerei Shemayim when somebody's willing to pay for the sushi station to say, I'm not doing it. I'm not going to do it. I don't know. Maybe there are such... He said, Rabbi Gersten said, I asked him why asking a non-Jew to make sushi is worse than letting children play with Lego, which the minhag is to allow. He said the children play for themselves, but one is asking the non-Jew to do it as a shayla of Amir la'akum. Not sure. And then he said, both Rebelski and Rav Shech do not think it's proper to have sushi stations where non-Jews stand and bring food on the spot. They think it's a zilzul of Shabbos and halachically questionable. Okay. I think most of the other vadim, I know I'm on the kashrus committee of the RCBC, we look to the OU for guidance on these things. You know, we're the small guys. So I think most of the places still allow it. I do think, I don't think any of them would allow a Jew to do it. I don't think any of them would allow a Jew to do it, because I think it comes down to this question of, again, if it's a derabbanan, if you're going to assume it's, again, if you assume like the stipler, that there's no problem at all, so then you can get out of the whole problem. But it doesn't seem like anybody assumes that way la'alacha. So if we don't assume that way la'alacha, the chai adam, the kitzah shofar, which are generally the sfarim that we turn to, you know, for guidance on what we should do halacha l'maisa, if this is what they're saying, so it puts us in a little bit of a bind. If you assume that it's only derabbanan, so then we're dealing with a double derabbanan. I don't stop my kids from eating the sushi when it's made by a guy in our shul. I personally do not, but I it's definitely halachically questionable. Yes.
That's a good question. Does anybody who discusses this issue have a goy do not chance discuss the issue that people might infer that therefore it's okay for a Jew to do, because most other things involving bishul, if you can't do it, you can't get it.
Right. I've not seen that discussion. Again, there's very very little discussion. About, again, there's more in more recent times, but very little discussion about sushi in general on Shabbos.
Let's say you're setting up shalshos and you're making party sandwiches, right, with a little olive, and you know, so they're kind of stuck together, and you want them to look good.
I don't know if that's really what you call stuck together. If it's really stuck together, just by the toothpick,
but the first time was that
you need both. Because by the dveila, it was a guf echad. It came together as one, but it didn't look good. So his chiddush was that in order for it to be us, so you have to have both qualifications. Yeah. Right. So again, I'm not a bucky in all those things. Again, there's one I know that you put the fish on top of the rice. I'm not sure if they pick the rice. Maybe that'd be a problem. If you want the rice to look in a specific shape, then you're at least putting the rice together, and then you're medalbek the chalakim of the rice. So that might be problematic as well. Yes.
The bracha on sushi?
Yes. I don't know. It's a little beyond the... I will tell you that a few years ago, I was sitting in the Beis Medrash and somebody brought a sushi roll up to Rabbi Willig, and we sat there dissecting it. And it seemed to be clear, and again, I guess financially this makes sense, that the rove is almost always rice. The rove is almost always rice. So again, the fact that it's a mezonos... Since rice is a lower level mezonos, would not automatically say that the bracha would be mezonos, just because of the fact there's a mezonos present. But If it's based on the rov, so at the time Rabbi Willig, I believe, I haven't followed up with him since, thought that the bracha would be mezonos. Now for those who don't want to eat the rice, or the carbs or whatever else, they might have a bigger problem. Then you might have to worry. But again, that would be the concern. I just want to take one more question afterwards. I just want to, in terms of getting back to the Purim Shaila, so if you assume all of this, so then the Chora, if you wanted to give sushi as the Mishloach Manos, it would certainly not be considered to be two minim. You put it together as one. That's our entire Shaila. You put it together as one. It's one entity, even though it has different ingredients. The same way with the salad, the poskim assume that you're not yotzei, or with two different apples or two different pieces of chicken, the top and the bottom, that you aren't yotzei because it's one min. L'chor, this would only be one min as well, and l'chor, you would not be yotzei mishloach manos just by giving somebody a sushi roll, even if it gave all the other, even if it had all the other pieces in it. Yeah. So I think, it strikes me from a conversation a very long time ago. To my understanding, there are two issues of figuring out the Derabbanan. One is figuring out whether Megabin is Derabbanan or Deraisa. And the question is, the Pashtus in the Rambam is that, especially the Gemara, is that it's the Gemara saying Chayiv, that it's Deraisa. The Pashtus in the Rambam saying it's told as Deraisa. The Magen Mishnah seems to disagree, and the Aruch HaShulchan quotes that, which was in the sources. Oh boy, we're really out of time now. That from earlier. My suffix is that maybe even if you assume that Megabin is maybe the svara that the stipler is saying is a strong enough svara to be mechalik on a derabbanan versus the raisa level. Meaning maybe I would say that cheese is worse because it really becomes this new entity, a derabbanan, which is doma. Certainly this would fit into the category. That's where I think the suffix comes in. To go from there to say that it's nothing like maybe what the stipler was trying to suggest, again, but I believe he wasn't saying it lemaisa, that I don't know that we would go that far. Okay, I want to make sure that we have enough time for the next person. Thank you all very, very much. Have a wonderful day.
I just point out that in the second set of Akaros are accidentally attached to these ones for Rabbi Zatz.
Okay.
So if you don't push it together so hard,
that might help.
But
then
it'll
probably fall apart.
You know, you just like them.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't look so pretty, and it's not.
Then you should be okay. I don't know why you're doing it, but it should work.
Yes, we once tried. I apologize. I was texting. I have a son in Israel. There's some issues going on. And I should be texting during this year. So.
No, didn't notice it's, that. No problem. Thank you.
I have to tell you, we tried doing it once.
Didn't work so well.
Everything you say about Popeye is trying to do it. No shadow.